Hello and welcome to yet another episode, Ty Sharm and Etherin, Wheel of Time podcast. I'm Sam.
I'm Will.
We're back again discussing Crown of Swords. We're slogging away and we're having a good time doing it, I'd
say. Yeah.
You know, it's good stuff.
For sure.
This is a Will episode. Will's going to take the helm of this one, and I will be the peanut gallery. So
color commentary.
There you go.
So we're starting off in chapter 17, The Triumph of Logic, which I rated a skip.
It's a nice chapter title, though.
Yes, it is. Odd chapter title choice, though, because it's such a, it refers to such a small portion of the chapter.
Logic does not generally triumph.
Yeah, as is often the case. Matt returns to the Wandering Woman, his head still spinning from his encounter with Tylan. He comes back to find Vannon and Harnan chilling out and looking all sorts of ways. The, I don't know, there's descriptions there.
There's too many sometimes.
And it's kind of funny, you know, they're minor characters, and it really just makes it slow down when it stops to, like, really describe a minor character.
Let's check in with these guys and see what they're doing. I always liked Vannon, you know, the gap between his teeth so you'd spit between, and how he was, like, a really good horse thief. But
yeah,
Vernon and I just have no mental any kind of feeling for at all.
Well, you've got a better picture of either of them than I do. I hadn't really formed a solid picture of Vannon, but if you want to get a solid picture, you can read this chapter because it gives you one. When Matt gets to his room, he's attacked by two men who seem to attempt to kidnap him. But Matt easily kills the two of them with a firm assist from his luck. There's a funny moment when Matt turns around after the fight and Nerim is just standing there immediately.
Oh, my lord's shirt is being,
yes, exactly,
put on it.
Yeah, already complaining.
Yeah.
So some other stuff happens, or to be more accurate, a whole bunch of nothing happens. Like, that's really that attack moment is kind of like the only like big thing that happens in this chapter.
Closest we get to a sudden dark friend attack. It's right. More like a sudden dark friend nuisance bumped into in the hallway or something.
Yeah.
Doesn't quite have the same ring to it, but carry right on.
It goes on, and it happens really quickly. Mistress Anan, the owner of the inn, and her husband show up, and they don't really have any idea who these guys were or why they tried to kidnap Matt. Well, then why are we talking about it? Anyway.
Like, there's that little, I don't know, is it later where he talks about how Nibudar, the woman, is the head of the inn, and man is a fisherman or whatever. I think they do this or that a little bit here, and she punches her husband or son. I don't know. I don't remember if that was that this point or later.
It may have been here.
Yeah. Nothing important. I did enjoy where, like, I always enjoy, like, when a male character makes a joke and his wife hits him very hard. It happens multiple times to multiple different couples. I mean, I'm thinking of Bashir. It happened, and then anyway,
right?
That's always fun.
Matt realizes that he's had a note slipped in his pocket that is a warning to Nynaeve and Elaine to be careful if they want to avoid being sent back to the tower. He figures it must have been Jolene, or Teslin, who slipped in the note. We swap to Jolene's POV, and she and Teslin.
Great.
Yep. let's check in on Jolene.
All right, that's real something we were all dying to do.
Yeah. I know you've all been wondering what's been going on with Jolene this whole time. So I'm glad we're swapping in. So they're talking about some stuff that doesn't matter much, and
that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah, Teslin thinks they should grab the Supergirls and Matt and bring them back to the tower, but they're also both angry with Elida for sending them to Ebudar because it was kind of
nothing ever happens in Ebudar.
Right. Apparently. So they decide to cool their heels until Elida tells them otherwise. So yet another check-in where the sum result is, hey, you want to do something? And it's like, nah.
Yeah. Thanks for that, RJ. That was fantastic.
Yeah. I will say, though, I give him a little props here, only because there are so many times in stories where you wonder why some character chooses not to intervene. Like, hey, what were they doing during this time?
And here, at least we have that. Like, here's why. They talked about it. They debated it. Decided not to.
Exactly. But the issue here is I just have trouble caring about Teslin and Jolene.
Right. If it was like some Forsaken or something, like, you know, there's several times there's been a boss fight. And it's like, well, what were the other Forsaken doing during that? You think they would have, like, been a good chance for them to, like, get in a bum hit and just, you know, shoot some balefire at Rand's back. Right. Of course, they're not, you know, they're not omnipotent, I guess. They don't always know what's going on, but you'd think they would. Maybe occasionally, but
right. Well, and as we get further into the series too, there are so many different characters, like these kind of tertiary characters,
the bit player villains that are just, you know, like, yeah, and not necessary evil, just sort of unpleasant.
Right. Yeah. Just like little bothersome. Mm-hmm. We have so many characters at this point that mm-hmm. it starts to feel like, do we really want to check in with these people?
Yeah, you know, this Stephen King had this problem in The Stand, and he writes about this in his On Writing memoir. And mm-hmm. he had real major writer's block. He couldn't figure out. Maybe I've told the story already. I don't know. He couldn't figure out what to do. So he just put a bomb in both of their, like, in the closets of both groups of people and killed most of his characters. And I just keep thinking RJ just needed to drop a Tyrangriel bomb.
Yeah.
So in like the White Tower, I don't know, just kill off some of these folks and just, yeah. you know, it'll be okay. Just lean into the grim dark just a little more. A little more.
Maybe. So speaking of characters that we don't care about, next we swap to Faelion Boda. Now, who is Faelion Boda, you may ask?
I don't remember, and I just read this.
Well, she's a member of the Black Aja, who's joined by Isban, another member.
I was reading it as Faelane.
It's a different character than Faelane.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
They're torturing someone, trying to find out a cache of Tyrangriel, which Faelion is beginning to doubt even exists. They're still following orders from Mogedion, but they're both starting to question whether she has abandoned them, as they haven't heard from her in a while.
Yeah, these Black Aja are just a dime a dozen at this point. Like, they're right. just, you know, they're like force wielding, so to speak, dark yep. friends that just have no, yeah, they're just, yep. we don't need a name, really.
And so, you know, Faelion begins to think that they should go capture Nynaeve and Elaine and bring them to Mogedion. And this is blah, 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 blah. So
well said.
We swap to Noel Sharine's perspective. I don't know if if Noel has been named yet, though. So I'm not sure if it's a little bit of a spoiler for me to say that's who it is. It's not a spoiler. There's a character named Noel. We've met him already. He was just an old man.
Yeah.
And he's a new character in this book. He's one that easily gets lost in the shuffle. And I really want to point him out, because if you're like me, he doesn't really seem all that memorable. And later we learn more about him and he becomes a much more interesting character. So I want to give a moment and introduce him. We actually first met him back in chapter 14, where he just like showed up for a second. Mm-hmm. He's an older guy who's seen much of the world and has lots of interesting stories to tell. In this scene, he talks about seeing two Aes Sedai, staying at a goldsmith's house, and mentioned that there was something he needed to remember. There's not much here. It's not that interesting. Again, this is all why I'm like, this is still a skip. Honestly, on this reread, this was the most interesting part of this chapter to me.
I totally missed it. 100% missed it. I just Googled it and now I know why. I mean, that if you Google it, it's a spoiler. But now I'm like, oh, okay, I got you. But I totally missed that. Like, forgot. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm sure any first time reader is like, what?
Yeah, that's why I want to point him out.
Sure.
Just notice this guy. Mm-hmm. And if you're the kind of person that you hear that and you're like, you're spoiling, I'm not spoiling anything for you.
No, we're saying, I'm saying don't Google it.
Yes. Just notice this guy. That's all I'm saying, because the first time read through, I didn't even pay attention to him until like way later. And I was like, man, it would have been so much richer if I had been. You get introduced to so many characters from this point in the series on.
Yeah, that's true. And you don't know. And there are plenty of them, like whoever that dude was that Gawain choked out. We never hear from him again.
Right.
You know, like it was kind of funny. My throat, my lord, or whatever he said. And he never came back again. Yeah. Gawain could have killed him and thrown him in a ditch and we wouldn't have known.
Right.
The difference.
There's so many named characters in this that it's like, hey, we're trying to offer you a little help if you're reading through. And it's like, this is an important character. That's mm-hmm. all I'm saying.
Yeah. I think you're fully within your rights to do that.
So chapter 18, as the plow breaks the earth, I call this a skim. Basically, I'm saying skip the first half, read the last half. And the first part's a little slow. Rand's meeting with the Aiel clan chief and he's ordering around Morana, Aes Sedai character number 376, mm-hmm. To illustrate that he is indeed not an Aes Sedai puppet. They discuss what to do about the remaining Shido, which are camped at Kinslayer's Dagger, which is a small mountain range that shoots off the spine of the world and not, as I thought, a Celtic rock tribute album by a Slayer cover band. Like I said, this part is slow and you could skim it, you could skip it.
Right. It is the second half of this chapter that is actually good. It, like, this builds up to it and it's like all the mundane details leading up to it. It's kind of make, I was just kind of like, oh, I'm ready for this chapter to be done. And then the second half comes like, oh, wait a minute. Now I'm excited again. Now I'm and I must say, only because I'm a second time reader. Like the first time I'm like, oh, another new character, who cares? But again, we're going to be here to say this is one to pay attention to. So anyway, continue.
So Berylaine bursts in and is very upset about Rand trying to send her back to Mayen after a failed attempt on her life. Berylaine proving here that she is more than a pretty face. She wants to be in the fight and she's willing to argue with Rand. So Luce Theron starts humming again. And when he sees Berylaine, who also has her Aes Sedai advisor, Anura, with her.
I think in the show, they're just going to pretty much have to just have Berylaine in lingerie all the time. Right. Based on the way the Jordan writes her.
I don't care as long as whoever plays her, they dub her over with Michael Kramer's Berylaine voice.
Yeah, exactly. That's important. or even Michael Kramer's Rand voice. That'd be fine.
just Michael Kramer. Michael Kramer
needs to be in the television program is what we're saying here.
Actually, both Michael Kramer and Kate Redding need to.
Yeah, I don't care who they are. He could be Noel, who we just discussed. Yeah. That'd be fine.
Yeah, actually, I'd be for that.
Yeah.
Again, there's nothing too special about this part, but that I just mentioned. But here it comes. After they argue, a little more than halfway through this otherwise very dull chapter, in walks Cadswain Maladrin.
Yay! An interesting character. It seems like yet another Aes Sedai name, but no.
Right. Yeah, and I wrote here in my notes, it's another case where you could really miss an important character's introduction if you're just cruising through these kinds of...
Yeah, I mean, especially this scene's like, wait, is this somebody we've seen before, like somewhere else? I don't know.
Right.
Nope, have not. She just showed up.
Cadswain is a legend among Aes Sedai. She's the oldest Aes Sedai still living, and she's been out of the tower for so long that many thought
like,
she
sort
was...
sort of retired, like...
Right.
Everybody thought she died.
Exactly. So according to the Wheel of Time companion, before the Supergirls stepped on the scene, Cadswain had been the most powerful Aes Sedai in the Third Age.
Aha. Okay, I can buy that.
Here she just walks in out of nowhere. Like, really just walks into the room.
She's like everybody's talking, and she just walks in and just, you can all shut up now. Go get me tea.
Right. So the two Aes Sedai that are in there, Mirana and Anura, are immediately like, no, don't kill him.
She has a reputation of dealing with male channelers.
It's this, like, halfway between freaking out and fangirling. Like,
if Rambo walks in like, oh my goodness, it's Rambo, please don't murder everybody.
Immediately all the Aiel veil, like, they're like, oh crap, something's going down. She is totally not at all impressed. She remains calm. She looks around the room at the Aiel and the Ashaman. Rand kind of instructs everybody to, like, okay, chill out. Let's not just attack the random person that just walked into the room.
Right.
Berylaine is then like, hey, I'm a peace out.
I think we're done here. So
and she's like, oh, and if you want me to go back to Mayen, that's cool. Like, she's like,
right.
Like, whatever I got to do to get out of this room right now.
Yeah. So this is awkward. So I'm going to leave.
And Cadswain asks for tea. Rand pours her some using the power, which is kind of a power move.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, hey, look at me. I'm a man who can channel.
What are you getting about it?
And she is totally cool with that. She doesn't react at all. The other two Aes Sedai seem a little put off by this. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, sure. And then when he hands her the tea, she says, that's a good boy. Which
enrages him.
Is such a baller move. Like, in a lot of ways, that's a perfect introduction to Cadswain. Like, at first, when I was rereading this chapter, I was like, this is really kind of anticlimactic considering how big a deal Cadswain is.
Yeah.
But then I was like, no. This
classic Cadswain, and like on a first read through, like reading the scene, it's like, oh, she's awful. I don't like her at all. Or, I mean, I guess there's you know, maybe another perspective, someone who immediately loves her. I, as someone who really was like in Rand's corner, it's like, man, he's dealt with enough of this kind of thing. Like, no, let's not. But
right.
I ended up loving the character. I won't go into detail as to why. Obviously, we don't want to spoil anything.
Right.
If there's any like, anyway.
Yeah.
But in the long run, in the like kind of grand analysis, definitely think she's an awesome character. And so.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And I, while we're on this, I want to mention here that my dream casting for Cad Swain is Helen Mirren.
Ah, that'd be great. Oh, man.
Like, that's who I picture whenever in this whole scene. Like, couldn't you see her? That's a good boy. Like, all of that.
Yeah, definitely. Great.
Cad Swain throws Rand off his balance by just casually asking if he started hearing voices.
And he's like, no. No way. Don't know what you're talking about. Heard any voices?
Right. Yep. Instead of being like, yeah, I'm crazier than a sack of badgers.
Help me. I need help.
Right.
I'm hearing the dead guy's voice. Please help me.
He does what every sane person does when being accused of being insane, and he yells for everyone to get out.
Get the heck out of my room.
And then, reinforcing that he's totally sane, he shouts in an empty room alone for a while.
Yeah, he does. He does that.
Yeah, yeah. Then this woman named Idrian Tarson shows up, and if you're like, oh, yeah,
Idrian. And we're back to not caring again.
Yeah. She was in charge of the school that Rand started, and apparently she gives him some bad news, but we don't find out what that is quite yet.
Uh-huh.
So then we're on to chapter 19, Diamonds and Stars. I put this one as a skim. This is a good chapter because we get to know Cad Swain, who is, as we've said, a fun character.
Yeah.
We get lots of details that slow things down. We're in Mirana's head for this, and as she follows Cad Swain with Nura, they meet up with Karuna and Bera for Cad Swain to give them a good talking to. We find out more about who Cad Swain is, her reputation as kind of a maverick who's instead of climbing the ladder of power in Tar Valon, she went her own way. So she asks a lot of questions and they catch her up. The most interesting things that happens here is Cad Swain asks why they haven't returned to the lawfully raised Amyrlin in the White Tower.
We're like, we don't really work with her. We're
right. Well, they don't really say anything at first. And so she just goes, so you have a little backbone, making it clear. It's really,
she's just like testing them.
Right. Yeah. Trying to find out whose side they were on and without showing her hand. And so it's, anyway, it just makes it clear Cad Swain is not pro Elida. We can kind of safely assume, like, okay, she's all right. So we swap to Min, who is on her way to tell Rand that Kolaver had hung herself, you know, so that's cheery. And when she walks into the room to see him, he's been tearing it apart in the wake of hearing that Harrodfell has been torn apart.
Right, that was the bad news we missed.
Yeah, probably by a shadow spawn. If you've forgotten about Harrodfell, because he didn't have a huge part. He was the absent-minded professor at the school that ran it open.
I think on the wiki, and this I'm not going to give it away, but there's a particular shadow spawn that appears at the end of this book for the first time. That there, right. The speculation is that said shadow spawn is the one who killed Harrodfell.
Yeah, I think if you read the scene at the end of the previous book in the epilogue, it kind of makes clear as a reread that indeed is the case. Mm-hmm. So
he employed as an assassin of sorts.
Rand's sad because the dude he often talked history and philosophy with is dead, and Min is upset because she found Kolaver dead, and they're both upset. So anyway, of course, they start kissing, and then we fade to black.
Mm-hmm.
So that's finally the point at which they're actually a couple finally, and not just Min toying with Rand.
Right. That is true. Yep.
For the last few moments in this chapter, we're actually in Cad Swain's head. She's leaving the Sun Palace. She thinks about how stupid Elida is and how Rand will be a great challenge.
Also, yes.
which she's like, that'll be fun, since she hasn't found a task to be impossible since that one time 270 years ago.
Oh, okay. Yesterday.
Yeah. It just adds to how fun her character is that she's just like, it'll be nice to have a challenge. I haven't had a challenge in a few centuries.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 20, Patterns Within Patterns. Look, it's almost a skip. Okay, it's a skip. Well, but okay, it's a skip. Well, it's a skim.
I did the same mental like gymnastics with every chapter. Like, is there a good reason to read this at all? Is there a reason to skim, or just maybe not? So fair enough.
obviously you'll make up your own mind, but if you just, if you want to skip it, here's the summary.
You know, as a general rule, I've been thinking about this. If you, if you're slogging through and you think, oh, this never ends, go ahead and skip that chapter. Yeah. I guarantee you it will be okay. Like, you won't skip the wrong chapter 9 times out of 10. And like, I'd rather you skipped even an important chapter and continued than just giving up on the series. Like, I've seen people do. Like, if they get to like the end of book 8 or book 9, like, I just gave up. It was too bad. Like, okay, we understand it was a slog. But just, if you could have continued just a little bit longer, another book or two would have been okay.
Yeah, part of the reason why I go to skip with this one is because it is a Savannah-centric chapter.
Yeah, fair enough.
But it kind of has some interesting info in it in spite of that. Savannah's with the Shadow Wise Ones. They're asking each other how they can occupy a few minutes of the reader's time without really advancing the plot or developing any interesting characters, you know.
They're pretty good at that.
Yeah, and they have something called a call box that Savannah demands one of the channelers activate. Apparently the call box has surprisingly good reception, as a guy whom they know as Kadar answers Savannah's call. Let's meet in 10 days at that one place, she says, and Kadar is like, why not meet now? And a gateway opens up and he and a woman called Maisia, I don't care, who is pretending to be under his control. Savannah was supposed to have brought Rand to Kadar, and he was going to give them a way to control Rand, which actually we've run across before in the series. Since they don't have Rand, he's like, I'm not going to give it to you.
I'll keep it for myself.
Right. I will say this actually proves me wrong about something I said during the last book. Savannah actually did have a plan to control Rand. It was vague and dependent on a guy who's super shady.
Yeah.
But she did have a plan. Now, how she was going to get him to that guy after capturing him.
You know what it reminds me of? The Cylons from Battlestar Galactica. They have a plan. Did you ever watch the remake in the early they always started out, the Cylons have a plan. Like, but do they really? Because it gets kind of convoluted a couple of times, and I don't really know that they have a good plan. They keep changing it.
Savannah asks Kadar for him to show them how he traveled, and he says he'll give them some traveling boxes for a price. We swap to a perspective of a mystery character. I'm going to pause right here and say at the end of this episode, I would like to explain who this mystery character is.
Have a spoiler section and go through this. But it's not super clear here. I mean,
but the reason why I'm bringing this up now is because I actually think you would benefit from knowing, but I don't want the spoiler sensitive folks to be upset with me mentioning this too early on. So anyway, this mystery character. We know it's a Forsaken because he talks about wielding the true power.
Right. And there's only one of those who actually does wield the true power that I know.
Right. And so is this the first time we've actually heard about that? I think earlier
First time we've seen proof of it, maybe. Like, I think they've referenced it. And they're always like, only if you do that, you're going to go crazy, you know? And like, it's crazy powerful, but you're going to lose your mind. So no one actually does it, even if they could.
Right. So the true power is the Dark One's power, and only those he permits to channel it can use it.
And you see the saw across your eyes, which is like, anytime you stand up too fast and you get the little dots in your eyes, I always just imagine it's the Dark One. Anyway.
Yeah. So this new perspective, this character is watching the people we just met called Kadar and Maelivija, and if you're like, ugh, more new characters, well, the good news is
they're actually not a new character.
Not new characters. They're Forsaken. We've already met.
Changed their names.
Yep. Samael and Grayandall.
Samael made himself taller.
Right.
Isn't that what we would all do if we were absolutely had an illusion? Give ourselves big muscles, make yourself tall if you're a guy.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Samael says he's totally got a truth with Luz Theron, and he's going to be made Nablus and going to be the Dark One's chief agent, and he's got a girlfriend in Canada.
She goes to another school.
And so Grayndall asks why Samael is toying with the Shido. And I've got the same question, actually.
Yeah, what is your plan exactly? To sow chaos?
And yes, and he's increases in chaos are good. So
I think that Samael thinks he's a lot smarter than he is.
I really do think, like, he's just running around doing random stuff.
Like, he thinks he's being all subtle and, like, mischievous, or not mischievous, but, like, conniving. And he's just not. Like, he's just not. He's doing stuff that doesn't matter. You know, right. Rand knows exactly where he is and has a plan, you know, to get him. And, like, dude, you have an inflated opinion of yourself.
I think you're right. But yeah, at the end of this, the Watcher, as the narration calls him, channels the true power and rips a hole.
What's the point of calling him the Watcher at this point and not just saying who he is? I don't really think.
I don't understand why. That's why I say soft spoilers.
Yeah, because this, like, you know, we know who this character is by the within a chapter or two, even. Not long. Maybe within 5 or 10. I don't know. It's not very long.
I want to talk a little bit about. And explain him a little bit more, because to me it's very unclear in this.
Oh,
in
yeah,
this
especially book. For a first time reader, like, okay, another person, who is this?
Yeah, anyway, he channels true power and rips a hole in the pattern and steps outside of it.
You know, right. Like you do. Great. Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Chapter 21, Suovan Knight. I rated this a read.
Oh, wow. I praise for the slog.
Yeah. Randomly, a group of beggars attack Matt.
This is a fun one. Yeah.
Yeah. Which he just takes as a mugging, and he manages to get away. There are fireworks in the sky in honor of some holiday called Suovan Night. He goes back to his
festival or something in Ibu.
Right. He goes back to his room at the Wandering Woman, and after jumping into a dance, whoever she is, angrily tells Matt that there is a gilded woman in his room, and the dice are thundering in his head when he opens the door to see Birgitta.
Yeah.
Suddenly seeing her clearly, he has this clear recollection of the day he blew the Horn of Valir.
Remembering his own memories.
He recalls all the heroes that came back to fight the Shan Chan, including Birgitta, who stands before him now. After he asks how she could be here in front of him in the flesh, and she explains briefly that she was ripped from the pattern, she also explains that her memories of her former life are fading. Mm-hmm. Then Birgitta says that Matt clearly has a few secrets, since they've been having this whole conversation entirely in the old tongue.
Oh, don't you hate it when that happens?
Yeah. Oh, dang it. You tricked me into speaking
Portuguese or Latin or old English, whatever equivalent.
And she even says he speaks with the accent of a true lord of Manetherin.
Like, oh, so, well, that makes it so much better.
Right. After a moment, they decide to continue their discussion over drinks.
Mm-hmm.
We swap to Nynaeve's perspective. This is where things kind of start getting fun. She's wondering how Birgitta's conversation with Matt is going. Her weather sense is telling her that a storm is coming.
Yeah, Nynaeve, you've been saying that literally since book one.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those, like, fantasy cliches. The storm is coming, but not a storm. A storm, the different kind.
Right, and it's like with her weather sense, it's like, all right, which one is it though?
Right. Yeah, if it's a weather sense, then how are you sensing the last battle? Like, it seems like that anyway.
Right. Spider sense, yeah.
So she, Elaine, Avienda, Julin, and Tom are hanging out. That's when Elaine begins to act strange. She's being all cheery suddenly and starts to dance around the room. And
it's like E.T., you know?
Yeah, right. Pretty much. She begins to use the power to randomly change her and Nynaeve's appearance, which upsets Nynaeve, because this gives away to Tom and Julin how they've been leaving the palace without being seen.
Right.
That's when Birgitta appears, and she is very drunk. So we learn that part of her warder bond side effects means that not only do they feel each other's emotions, but those emotions actually amplify and like affect the other person emotionally.
So I wonder if this is different from the like typical water bond in terms of like getting drunk.
It definitely is, because they even say that that's not supposed to happen. Gotcha. Yeah. And Elaine is like, well, maybe it's because it's two women in the bond, and that's why it's kind of amplifies emotions rather than just telling you. Right. And so anyway, the result, when Birgitta gets drunk, Elaine starts acting drunk. Mm-hmm. And so Birgitta reports that Matt requires an apology for their treatment of him after he rescued them at the Stone of Tyr. And wasn't that like a year ago?
He is not going to let that go.
Let it go, dude.
He's like, y'all have been real mean to me and I helped you out.
And anyway, after Birgitta explains things from Matt's perspective, Avienda takes Matt's side, actually, and agrees that they have toe.
Got some toe.
And Elaine begrudgingly says she'll apologize, but Nynaeve, of course, will do no such thing. So chapter 22, small sacrifices. So we're staying with the Supergirls, but we're now in Elaine's brain. They go to the Wandering Woman and both apologize to Matt, who is clearly recovering from a hangover.
He's like, why are you here? Leave me alone.
Right. It's kind of a funny moment because he's like, oh, like that? Yeah, I don't know. And you can tell, like, he said it when he was drunk. Like, I'm not gonna let talk to them until they apologize for the way that they treated me. And then they show up and they're like, we're so sorry. And he's like, oh, yeah. I did say that.
Oh dear.
Elaine has to give Nynaeve a flick with Sidar to get her to cooperate. So, you know, Matt just kind of shrugs it off. He's like, oh, yeah, that? No, it's, I mean, yeah, it's not a big deal.
Just leave, please.
Yeah, and they make some promises.
Do you have any Advil?
Right. They make some promises to Matt, including that they won't leave the palace without bodyguards if he agrees to help them. Then she explains that they're looking for something called the Bull of the Winds. By the way, somewhere in here, it's mentioned that Avienda and Birgitta are off spying on Drakkar Mhrd, and just FYI.
Yeah, like this happens several times. Like, oh yeah, they're off watching Carradine. And like, this is like multiple times people are watching Carradine's house. And it's like, okay. Fine.
Sure.
Yeah. Why does that always have to be a detail that's included? I guess fine. I guess it's just to tell us where somebody is.
They ask Matt to move into the palace, and he mutters something about the dice stopping. And so he agrees and moans when he finds out that Tyland has a room picked out for him down the hall from hers. I'm sure that'll go well. Once the Supergirls head out, Nynaeve complains that Matt will be trouble when they're met by Mistress Annan, who thinks that they're just a bunch of floozies.
Just a bunch
visiting
of trollops.
Yep, visiting Matt.
Not to be confused with trollocs.
And there'll be nothing but trouble for him. So what's more is she believes they are just pretending to be Aes Sedai. And right. There is absolutely nothing they can do to convince her.
Mm-hmm. She's like, come with me.
Right. But she explains that she knows of some women in town who can channel, who take runaways from the tower.
And Elaine's ready to just be like, go away. And Nynaeve's like, no, just, you know.
Yeah, here, hold on. Yes, we would be interested in meeting these women, and they could help us in all this.
Elaine's like, Nynaeve?
Yes. While the reader can infer that Nynaeve thinks these women will know where the Bowl of the Winds is.
Right. Elaine cannot make such a connection, clearly, right. Several chapters.
Right. And so I read that one at a read-ish.
Sure. It's
closer to a read than a skim. Mm-hmm. Chapter 23, I would rate similarly. It's a reedish next door to a weaver. So Mistress Annan takes Elaine and Nynaeve, whose perspective we're in, to the house that is, you guessed it, next door to a weaver, bullying them along the way, which Nynaeve is uncharacteristically cool about. Because indeed, she does believe that they will find the Bull of the Winds if they find the group of women who can channel that she's talking about. So they meet Rihanna Corley.
I have to just say, I disagree. I think this is a read. I really like the Ken or Rihanna Corley.
I
get, and I guess as a second time reader, it's just more cool to me that this character is showing up as a first time reader, maybe it's like, oh, somebody else just like catch me. So
yeah, no, I said read ish. I don't skip it for sure. You know, is
right.
That's not what I'm. That's not what I'm saying. The only reason why I said read ish is because you do get there's a third of the chapter that I would skip at the front. That's like Mr. Sanon walking around and saying hello to people and all this stuff.
Sure.
And so like up to that point, yeah, I'd say you can skim that, but yes, definitely from here on out, you want to read this.
Right.
For sure. So Rihanna is unhappy with Mr. Sanon for bringing the girls to her, but she proceeds to question the Supergirls. She also seems very convinced that there is no way these women could be Aes Sedai. Elaine is indignant over their treatment, and Nynaeve is trying to seem compliant in hopes that they'll soon be led to the Bull of the Winds. Rihanna says that they have a small group of women who used to be in the tower. A few of them are around the room, and they'd be glad to help out. Maybe help them find a place for them to work. it's a Rihanna joke. Anyway,
there you go.
Couldn't get out of the chapter without talking about Rihanna.
You should,
Anyway, finally, Elaine can't take it anymore, and she puts her great serpent ring back on her finger. But this doesn't convince anyone.
They're like, where did you get that made?
And it turns out that one of the women has for her capital T talent is shielding. So
Elaine, even though she's not very strong, right? She's got like makes like a bubble that you can't break. It just goes to show that the Great Serpent Ring, it's not like a Green Lantern ring. Like anybody, you could go to like, you know, Shane Company's equivalent in the Wheel of Time and get a Great Serpent Ring. You know, it's like, this is not convince anybody of anything.
No, exactly. If you've forgotten, Elaine is tied with Egwene for being the second most powerful female Aes Sedai after Nynaeve.
Right.
And so she should be able to break a shield held by just one woman, particularly a weak woman. Mm-hmm. But obviously, this lady does have a special ability to hold somebody. So these women still think they're just stupid tower runaways. And after a fashion, they kind of technically are.
Sure. Yeah. Like Elida would definitely say yes to that.
Right. The girls beg for information on the Bowl of the Winds, but Rihanna tells them that if they won't accept their help, then the Supergirls better get out of town because she hears there are Aes Sedai staying in the palace and she's going to tell him. Funny thing that these are two of those Aes Sedai who are staying in the palace. They just don't believe them. So,
right. As a second time reader, I'm like, the Rihanna Corley and the whole thing is starting. Yay. And I like.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like Rihanna Corley. I want to be clear. I like the kin. I don't think they're a waste. I think some people would say like, they need to be cut
out. They're part of this log. Nope. I disagree. I think they're an interesting side plot that really adds to like kind of the context and the, I don't know, just the.
I 100% agree. I don't dislike them at all And actually, you know, I will say this is a read chapter just so you make sure you get it. But I'm just saying the first little bit of it is a little slow.
It is a little bit slow. I agree.
And nothing actually other than introducing Rihanna and a few other folks, you don't get much plot wise. But I do like the kin. So anyway, they head out. And that's that. So I said I had a soft spoiler at the end of this. So I don't want to tell you to go away if you want just a little detail that is, I think, going to be helpful. So first of all, as Sam said, in a few chapters, it's pretty clear that the Watcher is Moradin.
Yeah.
Now
who Moradin is
right
is absolutely a spoiler, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how clear it is.
That's okay. That's the thing that I feel like I'm gonna say.
Have we already said spoiler warning?
Okay, I'll say it. Hard spoiler warning.
Yeah, now we should.
Okay. To me it's not
I can see where you're coming from. I can't.
It's, I mean, it's just because I looked this up while I was watching, because I was like, who the heck is this?
Like, right, right. It's like confusing.
You're introducing a what seems like a pretty major bad guy, and mm-hmm. like
he's Morden. It's just Morden.
Yeah, it's just Morden.
Hey, Morden, okay. Nice to meet you.
Right. So okay,
and Mogedion has the same reaction. She's like, don't you know who I am? Right. He's like, yeah, yes, I do.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, later on we meet Morden, and yeah, he's a Shamael. All right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. He came back. He didn't get bail fired, so he can come back, and he didn't get put in a woman's bar body or anything like that. He's just in a different dude's body, and he's Morden now.
Right. That's it. I actually would be okay with it if they got rid of that element of things, because. Yeah. To me, it's just confusing.
It is. It's like, all right, well, I mean, Ishmael is such a huge bad guy in the early books. Just bring him back, and it's like, oh, he's back. Oh, you know that.
Right.
You know
exactly.
I think changing the actor is a mistake unless the first actor is just, you know, not great. Like, you know, happens sometimes. I don't know. It could be an opportunity, but
yeah. My only request is that. He's Baal-Zamon for the first three books.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll mention again, I mentioned it back when we went through The Dragon Reborn, but that when Rand finally defeats him and he turns back into a regular looking dude, you can have whatever actor playing him as Baal-Zamon, but I feel like it would be a hilarious thing if, like, randomly it was Billy Zane. But that's just, I'm not really serious when I say that.
Or you could do like a weird Empire Strikes Back thing where it's Yosha's face. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's the artist formerly known as Ishmael, formerly known as Baal-Zamon, now Morden.
Like, yes.
Come on, guy. I mean, like, just change his eye color. I don't know.
Yeah. It's this thing that RJ does that I don't quite understand where I feel like it actually hurts our connection to the Forsaken and makes us, like, on my first read through, I really didn't care all that much about the Forsaken because I was having trouble, like, who's who and what's what. And I wasn't catching that Osengar and Arangar are, you know, whatever, Balthamel and Balal.
Always had trouble with that too. I always liked them. Just, I don't know. I like the concept of this, like, group of, like, super powerful bad guys.
Sure.
Who are from the past and have all this history with Rand in his past life. It's fun, but I'm with you. It is like confusing. Like, who are all these people? Like, and especially after they start coming back,
right?
That's when it is like, oh.
I wanted to like them, and it wasn't that I didn't like them. It's just that I had a trouble keeping up with who was who, what was going on.
Yeah,
and so, and I, for my friends that are reading through it for the first time right now, so far all of them feel that way. They're like, I'm not really interested in the Forsaken because it's just like, I don't know, I'm not clear on who's who and what the difference between them is. Now, after having read through it, and you get like this idea that there are all these, they all have their different personalities. They have their weaknesses. They have the things that they're kind of like, hey, this is my thing that I'm into. Mm-hmm. All that, then they become much more interesting to read back through, because then you know where they're all headed and what kind of stuff is going to happen with them. And you know, the ones that are kind of going to last a little bit longer, just to me, it would make sense. Yes. Okay. Just it's Ishmael. He's back.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, maybe with Arangar, don't just, you know, use the same actor and put him in a lady, like in a wig.
I guess that is a good point.
Now that I've said that, I kind of want that to happen. I don't know. But otherwise, yeah. Especially in Morden's case, don't do it. But.
They should do that, but have it be like the quantum leap thing where it's like everybody else sees Halima.
Right.
But that when it's from his perspective, he's just a dude in a dress.
Right. Like, I just want it to be like Danny DeVito or something, you know?
Will you dance with me, Matrim Cotton?
Oh, man.
Come here, Gwen. Let me give you a scalp massage.
Can I offer you an egg in this trying time?
Oh, man. That's all I had to say about that. I mean,
that's a good in that whole scene. It is like, and there's another scene later, and I don't want to talk about it now, not as a spoiler, because we're already past the spoiler section, just because I want to talk about it when we get to the boss fight. But it is like, well, that's confusing. And so, we'll get there. Thank you guys for joining us. If you like what you hear, please check us out, leave a review. Check out our website, tsmpodcast.com. We are on all the all the socials, yeah. Podcast TSM. Please drop us a line, send us a note. If you say something nice, we'll mention you on the air. If you have a question, we'll be happy to discuss it. And otherwise, Tysharman Etherin.